Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with the schedule of English language broadcast, or it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, NHK Japan, and Radio Havana, Cuba. We'll begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. In Israel, 42 Army reservists wrote an open letter in May stating their refusal to return to Gaza. 2 of those Army reservists spoke to Deutsche Welle about what made them change their minds about the IDF actions in Gaza. Many Israelis consider them traitors, and they may be charged in court with desertion. In Mexico, outgoing President Obrador got a judicial reform bill passed that will end the appointment of judges by the legislators and have them chosen by popular vote in their regions. Activists, mostly students, opposed the measure and stormed the Senate. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
In Israel, the ongoing conflict after Hamas's October 7th terror attack, some 42 Israeli reservists wrote an open letter in May stating their refusal to return to Gaza. They are among thousands of Israelis who have been called up since the start of the war to fight in the Palestinian territory. 2 reservists told DW News why they're refusing to serve again.
A few months ago, Yuval Green was in Gaza serving as a combat medic. The young Israeli was called up as a reservist for the war almost immediately after the Hamas terror attacks on October 7. Today, he's one of a small group of Israeli reservists to publicly refuse in an open letter to return to Gaza. His decision came after his commander ordered his unit to burn down the home of a Palestinian family they had taken over in Gaza.
They told us to take a house we're staying at, and when we went out of it, they told us to burn it down. And I went to my commander and asked him, why are we doing that? Is there a military purpose for that? And you know, the answers he gave me were just not good enough. And I said, I'm not willing to make several families homeless, especially where there's not even a reason for that to be able to achieve something. And the next day I left.
Even before the October 7 attacks, he had planned to refuse reserve duty because of his opposition to Israel's occupation of the West Bank. The horrific violence inflicted on unarmed civilians by Hamas-led militants made him reconsider. But while in Gaza, the atmosphere of revenge and the widespread destruction made him question his service.
I felt like the things we're seeing in Gaza cannot be justified. And when we went inside Gaza, me and my platoon, it became the clearest I could have seen. I mean, Israel is just took all of this anger and fury that they gained from, knowing that their friends died or things like that, and just took it all on the Palestinian property.
Michael Ofersiv spent almost 2 months in a war room across the border watching grainy videos. As operations officer, he monitored the movement of troops inside Gaza, ensuring their safety and authorizing airstrikes in those areas. But once out of the war room, doubts started surfacing.
It feels very, very far away from you, because it's like kind of grungy, sometimes it's black and white. It just feels, most of the time it doesn't really feel real, you know? But then when you go out when I go out of the war room and then I go to my phone, you see those pictures of the aftermath or videos of the aftermath of those airstrikes. You see those people buried under the rubbles. When you start hearing the really big numbers, you start asking yourself, how can it be? If we're doing such specific strikes and such a good, like such a great intelligence work and everything. How can it be that there are so many casualties, so many collateral damage, right?
Michael says there were no clear rules of engagement for the troops in Gaza.
The whole system was built in a way that you kind of like you fire first and then you ask the questions. Even like if you're even gonna ask any questions, because we did not ask any questions.
It is not easy to speak out. Mm-hmm. Family and friends support them, but some brand them traitors. Although refusing to serve could land both reservists in jail, so far the IDF has taken no action.
There is a chance, like they can still call me to be trialed and send me to jail. But I remember thinking very clearly. And I still feel that way, that I'd rather sit in jail than do whatever we did there.
Seeing the sheer destruction in Gaza was also one of the reasons Yuval gave for refusing reservist duty there.
Driving on a road with one of those military vehicles, you look to your right, you look to your left, and all you see is ruined buildings. Now, some of them were ruined for certain military purposes, I guess. Some of them were ruined because they found, you know, terrorist infrastructure below them, tunnels or stuff like that. I saw tunnels with my own eyes. So it is something that is happening. But Israel is definitely not trying to be surgical enough to make Gaza a place that would be livable afterwards.
The IDF rejected the allegations by Green and Ofer Ziv and said their rules of engagement were subject to Israeli and international law. They added, the destruction of buildings is done with the appropriate means. Actions done otherwise and not as a result of operational needs are contrary to the army's orders and the IDF's values and are examined. For both Yuval and Michael, one of the main reasons for speaking out is to push the government for a ceasefire agreement to end the war and bring home the remaining hostages in Gaza.
We have deals on the table. We've had deals on the table since December. Clear deals that say the war would end, we'll do a ceasefire. All the hostages would be returned to Israel, and then Israeli soldiers would cease dying. And I think something very important in addition to that, the fact that Palestinians would stop living hell that they have been going through in Gaza.
They know that they are a tiny minority among reservists, but they hope to spark at least a debate within Israeli society.
Moody's ratings agency is warning that a planned judicial reform could seriously undermine Mexico's economic and fiscal credibility. The measure calls for judges at all levels to be elected by popular vote, and that, the agency says, could erode critical checks and balances. Mexico's states are expected to quickly ratify the measure, which is backed by outgoing President Andrés Manuel López Obrador's ruling party. Well, he says it's necessary to stamp out corruption, but protesters say it'll have the opposite effect.
Mexican protesters say justice should be blind. But they fear the newly passed reforms, which establish elections for judges, will make courts partisan and open to influence. Students and judicial workers are leading the demonstrations.
Because it goes against the checks and balances and judges' impartiality. The judge has no democratic role at all. That's what the legislators are for. They're supposed to be our representatives, although they have turned a deaf ear to our requests.
Opponents stormed the Senate as it voted on the law. They echoed concerns by human rights groups and the United States ambassador, who said Mexico's democracy was in danger. Even the Supreme Court's Chief Justice said elections would let criminals put pressure on judges. But senators relocated to another chamber to pass the law. It's one of the final acts of outgoing leftist president Andrés Manuel López Obrador, who says the world's first judicial elections will make courts accountable to the masses instead of financial elites.
Los jueces, con honrosas excepciones, judges, with honorable exceptions, magistrates and ministers, are at the service of a predatory minority that has dedicated itself to plundering the country.
The president has his supporters, who watched as the delayed vote passed at night.
We are supporting the reform because everyone who has approached the courts seeking justice has realized how rotten the judicial power is.
The changes must still pass Mexico's state legislatures, where the ruling Morena party is confident of victory, despite the waves of outrage on the streets.
That interview and report were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which can be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channel called DW News and DW Documentary. They're also available on most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. Next, NHK World Radio Japan. A super typhoon called Yagi hit Vietnam with severe damages. An update on the sale of U.S. steel to the Japanese firm Nippon. Ukrainian drones hit a Russian ammunition depot, which they allege contained North Korean missiles. The U.S. alleges that Iran is supplying missiles to Russia, which Iran strongly denies. Australian Prime Minister Albanese wants age limits imposed on youth using social media. An Israeli airstrike hit a designated evacuation zone in the Gaza Strip, killing at least 40 people, mostly civilians. NHK Japan.
The death toll continues to climb in Vietnam in the wake of Typhoon Yagi. Nearly 200 people have died, with many caught up in floods and landslides. The powerful storm made landfall over the weekend, bringing torrential rains that wreaked havoc in North Vietnam. State media say the death toll as of Thursday stood at 199. At least 128 people were missing. The number of victims is expected to rise. The Vietnamese government says it is the country's worst disaster in 60 years. The storm has also triggered flash floods and mudslides in northern Thailand. It has left at least 9 people in the country dead and affected 36,000 households. Residential areas and markets in the provinces of Chiang Rai and Chiang Mai were inundated. The Thai-Myanmar border area of the Mae Sai district was among the hardest hit. Some people there had to fight for their lives. Meteorological authorities warn of more heavy downpours and flash floods in the coming days.
Sources say a top Nippon Steel executive met with U.S. government officials in Washington on Wednesday in a last-ditch effort to save the U.S. steel acquisition deal. Nippon Steel Vice Chairman Mori Takahiro aims to convince the officials that the takeover will entail no national security risks and will strengthen the foundation of the U.S. steel industry. The Japanese steelmaker said the two companies had agreed to the deal in December last year. The Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States has since been examining the proposed takeover. The body reviews mergers and acquisitions of U.S. businesses by foreign firms to assess potential impacts on U.S. national security. Biden's administration opposes the takeover, and media reports say the president is set to block the multi-billion dollar deal. Some experts say the outcome could complicate efforts to strengthen economic security with key ally Japan and will only help China, which accounts for about half of the world's steel output. Biden and Vice President Harris, as well as former President Trump, have all voiced opposition to the buyout.
Ukrainian drones have reportedly hit a Russian ammunition depot that stored North Korean missiles. The governor of Voronezh in western Russia said that Saturday's attack caused a fire and forced local residents to evacuate. In an exclusive interview with NHK on Friday, a Ukrainian military research institute said Russia is believed to be using North Korean short-range ballistic missiles against mainly civilian targets. The Central Research Institute of the Armed Forces of Ukraine said Moscow's aim is to weaken morale. Russian attacks continued in Ukraine on Sunday. In the northern Sumy region, authorities said 2 people died and at least 4 others, including 2 children, were injured.
Western leaders have warned against any support for Russia. They say officials in Iran have defied them and supplied short-range ballistic missiles. They fear the weapons could be used in the war effort in Ukraine. Russian forces are believed to have been using Iranian drones on the battlefield for about 2 years. Now, Western allies say they'll have more firepower. Military analysts warn the Russians could use the missiles to hit military and civilian targets, including energy infrastructure. And the Iranians could face new sanctions from the European Union.
We strongly deny the accusation of sending weapons to one of the war parties.
Kanani says Iranians are not part of this war. And he says a political solution would be the best way of bringing the fighting to an end. Russia's presidential spokesperson says he views Iran as an important partner. But Dmitry Peskov says reports about weapons transfers are not always true.
Australia's Prime Minister says his government will implement nationwide legislation this year that introduces age limits for social media usage, citing concerns over mental and physical health.
I want to see kids off their devices and onto the footy fields and the swimming pools and the tennis courts. We want them to have real experiences with real people because we know that social media is causing social harm.
Anthony Albanese, who announced the plan on Tuesday, said online bullying can occur and stressed that social media platforms have a social responsibility. The government has not specified the minimum age for access to social media, but Albanese said it would likely be between 14 and 16. A poll conducted in August by ABC News, an Australian public broadcaster, found around 60% of 1,533 respondents supported restricting social media to people under 17 years old.
An Israeli airstrike hit a designated evacuation zone in the Gaza Strip. Local authorities say at least 40 people were killed in the raid. The Israeli military on Tuesday said the attack targeted Hamas fighters operating inside a humanitarian area in Khan Yunis, southern Gaza. It said senior Hamas members who were directly involved in the October 7th attack inside Israel last year were among those killed. The military said that prior to the attack, numerous steps were taken to mitigate the risk of harming civilians and that precise munitions were used. The authorities of the Palestinian enclave say Israel bombed tents for the displaced, killing at least 40 people and injuring 60 others. They condemned Israeli forces for committing a horrific massacre. In the more than 11 months since the latest round of fighting in Gaza started, the number of casualties has been rising, with no certain prospect for a ceasefire and hostage release deal between Israel and Hamas.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan on shortwave. They're heard at 10 p.m. at 11735 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp and most podcast sites. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so adjust them to your time zone. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or can help support this program, there's a link for online donations available at my website, outfarpress.com, or you could write to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Many, many thanks to radio station WFHP in Bloomington, Indiana, for generously helping to keep this freely distributed show airborne. Please join them in keeping this program going. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. In Brazil, former President Bolsonaro rallied thousands to protest the nation's ban on social media platform giant X, formerly Twitter. Venezuelan President Maduro said that people do not want more sanctions as threatened by the U.S. and called for a dialogue to prevent fascism. Cuba did an On This Day piece on September 11th. In Britain, tens of thousands of citizens took to the streets to call for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and a halt to weapon supplies to Israel. the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, in Gaza are warning of widespread contamination on the roads from weapons. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Former Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro has rallied thousands of protesters in central Sao Paulo to protest against the country's ban of the social media platform X. It also unfolded while Bolsonaro's political rival, President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, led an official parade with the country's military in the capital, Brasilia. Dressed in the colors of the Brazilian flag, Bolsonaro climbed atop a temporary stage erected on Sao Paulo's main thoroughfare, Paulista Avenue, and addressed the crowd, where some of those attending the rally waved Israeli flags in apparent support of Tel Aviv's genocidal war against Gaza. Speaking to the crowd, Bolsonaro's remarks to gain are one of the main figures responsible for the ban on X, Supreme Court Justice Alexandre de Moraes. In August, when X refused to comply, de Moraes released an order for the suspension of all the platform's activities in Brazil. It was the culmination of an ongoing spat between de Moraes and ex-owner Elon Musk. The billionaire entrepreneur had closed X's office in Brazil earlier that month to avoid having to comply with several court orders to suspend accounts peddling misinformation. On October 2nd, Brazil's Supreme Court unanimously upheld the decision to ban X, with all five judges offering their support. Explaining the decision, Justice Flavio Dino said, "A party that intentionally fails to comply with court decisions appears to consider itself above the rule of law." The Venezuelan head of state, Nicolas Maduro, said that the people don't want sanctions. They want to return to work in peace. At the same time, he ratified his call for national dialogue and the fight against fascism. Hatred, violence, division, persecution of people for their ideas, way of thinking and being cannot proliferate here, said the president on his television program Con Maduro Plus. Along the same lines, the president asked the opposition forces that ignore the institutions of the nation to respect the rules of the game and accept the election results. "We have played fair and we have won fair," he emphasized. Regarding the recent departure from the country to Spain carried out by the former presidential candidate Edmundo González Urrutia, the president said he understood the decision taken. "I tell Ambassador González Urrutia that I understand the step he has taken. I respect it and I hope that he does well on his path and new life, and that he can be sure that his wishes for peace and harmony for the country will be fulfilled. In Venezuela, peace will reign above all else," said the Bolivarian leader. Nicolás Maduro specified that Venezuela has to pass severe anti-fascist laws and praised the holding of the first World Anti-Fascist Congress that will be held in the country on September 10 and 11. He also applauded the fact that the National Assembly, together with the organized people, are discussing a law against fascism as a way of blocking any form of this political expression in the national territory.
And on this date in history, in 1973, the constitutionally elected president of Chile, Salvador Allende, was overthrown in a bloody military coup by General Augusto Pinochet, with the blessing of the United States and the Central Intelligence Agency, then under the President Richard Milhouse Nixon. The coup would begin a bloody military dictatorship with thousands killed, disappeared, and the dismantling of the social gains made by the Chilean people under the Popular Unity Government for 3 years. September the 11th, 1973, 51 years ago today, a sad day in the history of Chile, Latin America, and the world. And also on this date in history, of course, the terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center in New York City on September the 11th, 2001. The attacks would serve as an excuse to launch wars of aggression against Afghanistan, Iraq, and a number of other conflicts, all with the design of furthering U.S. imperialist interests around the world.
Thousands of protesters have taken to the streets in the British capital, London, to call for an immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip and demand a total halt of arms supply to the Israel regime amid its genocidal war in the besieged territory. The demonstrators gathered at the Piccadilly Circus in central London and later marched to the Israeli embassy as they carried Palestinian flags and chanted pro-Palestinian slogans. The participants in the rally also urged the British government to do more to stop the ongoing
divine killing in Gaza, which has so far left more than 40,000 people dead over the past 11 months. The latest protest comes after the UK government announced its decision to partially ban arms exports to the Israeli regime, saying that the partial ban will suspend 30 out of 350 arms export licenses for arms manufacturers supplying military equipment to the Israeli regime. UK Foreign Secretary David Lammy announced the decision amid criticisms of London's direct involvement in the Gaza genocide. Lammy warned that there is a clear risk that the banned weapons and ammunition provided by British weapons companies could be used to kill innocent Palestinians in a serious breach of international humanitarian law. The suspension comes after months of pro-Palestinian protests in London and other cities demanding an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and also a halt in British arms sales to Israel. Since the start of the Israel's genocidal war on Gaza in early October last year, the UK, and to a much larger extent the United States, has been supplying all kinds of arms and munitions to the Israeli regime. Media reports have revealed many of the weapons and ammunition shipments of arms manufacturers' goods to the Israeli regime are done quietly, without formal notification of governments or the public knowing about it. Tens of thousands of Britons have taken to Britain's streets on multiple occasions in a nationwide rally against arming Israel. Humanitarian workers on the ground in Gaza are warning of widespread contamination of Gaza by explosive remnants of war. Earlier this week, a Palestinian girl was critically injured in an explosion involving discarded explosive ordnance, EO, in Khan Yunis in Gaza's south, OCHA said. Children face a heightened risk of being exposed to EO, as they usually play outside, tend to search for scraps amongst rubbish and rubble, and lack an awareness on the danger of EO, OCHA said. Last week, 110 Palestinians were reported killed in Israeli attacks on Gaza and 2,030 people were injured, the United Nations reports. Among the most deadly attacks this past week was an Israeli strike on a residential building in central Gaza City that killed 9 people, including at least 5 children and 1 woman, UN's OCHA said in its latest situation report. A children's nursery was also hit in Jabalia in northern Gaza on the same day, killing 7 people.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website's working well at radiohc.cu, but there's no podcast. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6060 or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Daylight Saving Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcast, get a global perspective. You have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information for online donations. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The shortwave report, which is now in its 28th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 27 years, the shortwave report has been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm still recuperating from a spinal injury, so I'm staying at a house that's connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.